Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody to Fantastic Voyage. I am the captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson. I got my first mate, my son Chris Johnson, with me. Chris Johnson, Marcus Johnson. We are the only father and son combination in the history of NCAA basketball to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA. So I got to throw that out there always. Give Chris his props and give us
our props. Yeah, what? Y'all the first do what? What's that?
Man. We the first father and son only combination to win a national championship. The only. Thank you, Chris.
The only one.
There's been others that have won national championship. Mike Bibby, Henry Bibby, Scott May, Sean May, but they were at different schools. We were the only two.
Y'all goaded for that, man.
They can never take that away from me, man. They can keep me out of the Hall of Fame. They can do this, they can do that. But they can ruin my reputation, but they can't take that away from me, man. So that's a good thing. Listen, man, let me introduce you properly, man. We got special guests. Man, yeah. We are just thrilled to death to have this young man. I guess I can call him a young man. 10 years, 30 years old. Man, he's still young. This young man, the cornerstone. One of the cornerstones of the Bucks franchise. He's a native of Little Rock, Arkansas. He's been repping his hometown with a lot of pride. My second favorite player from Hall High School. my first is Sidney Moncrief. From the same school as Sidney Moncrief, Hall High School in Little Rock. But he's a McDonald's All-American, SEC Player of the Year at Arkansas. His grit, his determination, his work ethic. I've watched this dude put in hours and hours and hours just working on his craft, as they say, and you can see the improvement each and every year. He's finished as high as third a couple of times for sixth man of the year. Should have won it. That 1 year averaged like 14 and Chris almost 10 rebounds a game. And I thought he was the odds on favorite to win it, but he's going to keep on plugging, doing his thing. And you will also be hearing from him in Locked In, the next Behind the Bucks podcast series. Bobby's going to be featured prominently in that. So, Bobby, man, we welcome you to the Here District, man. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate y'all for having me.
All right. So, listen, man, we are headed into the season. Preseason is over with. And how you feeling about everything that's going on right now with this totally different look of a lineup with the Bucks right now? How are you feeling about this team at this stage of the game?
Man, I'm feeling great. It's always kind of refreshing to get back around the team around September, come back in, get around some guys. Obviously, you know, summertime guys get away and do their own personal training, do their own traveling, whatever they like to do in the summertime. And then early September, you kind of get back in the gym with the guys. And it's been great competition, man. Like the competitive spirit, the competitive nature that we have in our gym, probably is the best it's been, man. You know, we have a lot of guys that can do a lot of different things with the basketball. We have a lot of different guys that's super competitive, that's very much so coachable. I think Doc could have a great year of being able to just coach guys, and you know, guys can take constructive criticism and things like that. So I'm excited for the season. Obviously, you know, the outside world don't look at us like we nothing. But I know we got in our locker room, and I know that it's going to take all of us to get it done. But yep. I'm very much so excited for the season.
Put your finger over Giannis's face and see what you have, huh? That man.
Man, come on. That's how you be seeing it. Every day, every time we play, they're going to be saying something about us, man. Every time we play.
Oh, that's crazy. But listen, man. So, with you, let's digress and just go through your career. You're from Little Rock. I read something where you didn't really start winning until high school, really being a part of winning program. I know your mom, Tina Edwards, was a great ball player in her own right. So what was that like growing up with a mom who could hoop, scholarship to Jackson State? How old were you when you first beat her in 1-on-1? I always like to hear that. From different players.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of crazy. Growing up, I was a single I was a single child for 7 years, so it was just me and my mom just moving around. And then I remember I asked my mom for one little brother, and then I got three little brothers back to back to back. And then suddenly I had like this big responsibility to not let these guys down, and just feeling that pressure as the big brother. So my mom was the type of woman that just worked tirelessly to take care of her four kids. Whatever she needed to do, working two jobs, getting up 3, 4 in the morning. My mom worked for a bread company called Bimbo's Bakery, so she was always, doing bread routes and things like that, periodically throughout the day. So my mom was a super hard worker, and one thing I always took from my mom was her work ethic. My mom taught me how to work hard without even having to say a word. Like my mom getting up two, 3 times out the day to go to different jobs to help provide. What's it for me to go to the gym for 2, 3 hours to go work out on my craft each and every day? Like, so I kind of took that from my mom, and my mom used to always beat me in 1-on-1 though. I could never beat it. She always tried to post me up. She always post me up, do little
man.
jump hooks and stuff like that. So
Oh, that's
I
funny.
couldn't beat her as a kid, but when I got a little older, she didn't want to play me no more though. She
Uh-oh, uh-oh, uh-oh. And
didn't
when
want to play me
after
no more.
you beat her the first time, she didn't want to play you no more? Or did you ever beat her?
Yeah, I remember like, I don't think I ever beat my mom
She
1-on-1 though, bro.
retired. She retired undefeated.
Didn't play me no more. No, I don't think I ever beat her 1-on-1, bro. I don't think I ever beat her ever.
Wow. Yeah,
That's wild.
she goes on a lot of road trips. One of my favorite, enjoyments, Chris, is like we'll sit next to each other on the bus, and she'll talk about Bobby growing up and just some great stories. But just a terrific lady who is still so
Absolutely.
supportive of everything that you do, man. And you're really blessed, man. You're really blessed to have a mother like that took it that extra yard to make sure you and your three. But you said you wanted one brother, she gave you three. It's like, man, can you take some of these back? All that responsibility. I know that must have been something for you as the kind of the head of the household at that time, man. Just how was that pressure for you, man, in terms of how you approach things?
Yeah, man, just I'm not gonna say like it was just me and my mom my mom, my little brothers growing up as a kid. Obviously, I had my grandma who passed away, RIP, this year, and then I had my grandpa who stayed with us as well. So my grandma and grandpa was always like big support systems to us at our house. My grandma always had food cooked and stuff when my mom wasn't able to cook and be there. And then my grandpa played a big role with taking us to school each and every day. So we had help along the way, but my mom was just that backbone, that strong person who was like everything that I needed, as a kid growing up. I might not had everything I wanted, but
And
the
everything
things
you
that I
need.
needed every day, I always had those, and she always made sure that we were good. So I try to give it back to her as much as I can, man. My main sole goal, making it to the league, was basically my mom, my little brothers. That was my sole inspiration, just moving house to house like we moved. I lived in 17, 18 houses growing up as a
Woo!
kid. Like,
Wow.
so moving around as much as we did and being able to, having to share and sacrifice, like when it comes to team sports, that part became kind of easy to me because I've been sharing and sacrificing my whole life. So my mom and my three little brothers was definitely my biggest inspiration as a kid to why I wanted to be an NBA, and I wanted to make sure that, they had everything that they needed. I wanted to pay my mom back for all the hard work that she had did.
Bobby, how does that legacy of sacrifice kind of affect how your foundation and the work you do today with single moms, the Bobby Portis Foundation? How did that build that sort of backbone for that?
It's crazy. Like when I first got drafted into the NBA, I didn't really know about like foundations and things like that, and the mission statements behind it, and what they can do to help empower other people and things like that. When I first got drafted, I got drafted to the Bulls, and Joakim Noah was my vet, man. Shout out Sticks, by the way, man. That's my boy. He taught me a lot, but he had a Norris Ark Foundation that supported a lot of Black and Latino kids that was in the Chicago area and things like that. And they had like basketball camps, and they had like Rock Your Drop, like necklaces and things like that that he used to do for back in the day with those. And when I start progressing in my career, I wanted to start my own foundation. And starting your foundation, you can make it like anything you want, but I was just so passionate about single moms because my mom was a single mom. So I wanted my foundation to be in support of single moms. And ever since my, fourth year in the league, we're 7 years in now with the foundation. And
yeah. Wow.
Just giving back and doing as much as we can for, you know, when I played with the Bulls in that community, when I played with the Knicks in that community, and now being here in Milwaukee the last 6 years, we just tried to spread our blessings with others. Obviously, we can't change someone's situation entirely, but if we can give them a helping hand along the way and just inspire them, I think that, you know, that's a big push forward.
Yeah, listen, man. So, Underdog, that's your brand, not only your brand, but that kind of represents who you are. But where did that come from? That Underdog mindset, SEC Player of the Year, McDonald's All American. When were you ever an underdog, man? Like, when did you feel like an underdog?
Everybody always asked me that too. Like, so like growing up as a kid, like, when I was in 7th, 8th, 9th grade, I used to always look up all these rankings in high school. And I was just looking up like ESPN rankings.
We all did.
I look up like Rivals top 100 you know, all these rankings. And I look up all these players and it would say like Julius Randle. It would say Aaron Gordon. Yeah. It would say like guys, Jabari Parker. All these guys in my high school class. And I just always like chase these guys. You know what I'm saying? I just chase them.
Where were you ranked? Where were you ranked? Were you outside of the?
I wasn't ranked. I wasn't ranked yet. So I just chased these guys, and I couldn't wait to play against these guys. Mm. Once I finally got my opportunity, when I got moved up to the EYBL level, shout out Ron Crawford, RIP to him, by the way, as well. You know, he moved me up. I started playing EYBL with the Arkansas Wings. And and then from there on, it was like,
what was the first?
You know, you ranked top 10.
You're out of there.
You know what I'm saying?
You're out of there.
McDonald's All American. Yeah,
take me back to the first time you played against one of these top 10, 20 ranked guys, Jabari or Julius, whoever it was. What was that first time, and how did you feel? And were you nervous about that? Were you excited?
Yeah.
Were you confident?
So I've been playing against Julius Randle and Jabari, bro, since we was like seventh grade, bro. Like, I've been knowing these guys a long time. Yeah. Like, every time I link up with Julius to play against him, that's like one of my favorite players to play against, not because like of our talent levels, just because of like, bro, I've been knowing you, bro, since you didn't have kids, since we didn't have the things that we have. Like, I've been knowing you since we was little, bro. That drive and that competitive spirit be always fun playing against somebody that you've known for so long, like Aaron Gordon as well. I've been knowing these guys since sixth grade, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's kind of cool to see the progression of other players that you played against, and y'all like kind of grew together, you know what I'm saying? Sure. So like, that's the cool part for me. But my first time playing against them, I got moved up. So I was playing my same age in 10th grade, and I got moved up to the 11th grade team. And we were playing in Peace Jam. I know y'all know Nike Peace Jam. We were playing in Peace Jam. We pulled up to Peace Jam, and I ain't gonna lie, like, this is my first time playing against, you know what I'm saying, playing against older guys. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I'm like, all right, man, like, coach start me. I get to start too. I'm like, oh, it's up. So we had played against like the Georgia Stars. They had like Alex Poitras and all those guys that we played against. The Memphis Wild, they had like Jarnell Stokes and all those guys.
Okay.
And then after that tournament, I was ranked like top 30. But I didn't know I was ranked top 30. I didn't know I was ranked top 30 because, you know, I didn't look it up.
Yeah.
But my teammates was like, hey, bro. Like,
you done played yourself?
Hey, bro. hey, bro, you moved up. I'm like, oh, snap. But yeah, bro, it's kind of cool. Like, this basketball journey that you go on playing in the league, playing in high school level and college level, like, I cherish those moments because, like, it goes by, like, so fast, though. Like you look up and I was in the McDonald's All-American game playing in the UC, and that was 2013. And you fast forward 12 years later, I'm 11 years in the NBA.
Wow.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's
crazy.
Like it's crazy to think about, for real.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That's a good stuff. And Chris went through a similar thing as a 10th grader. He got moved up. Doug Gottlieb, his father, Bob Gottlieb, was his coach. And he came to me when Chris was a 10th grader. He said, I want to play him with my 18 and under team, my 17U team. And I'm like, I don't know, Bob, if he's ready. And he tossed him in there, man. And he just, and Bob Golly came back to me saying, man, oh no, he's more than ready. He was schooling some of those bigger, older players down in the post, and they didn't want no part of that.
You were 13 playing with the
17? No, 14, 14 to 15.
14. Big body. Hey, yeah. Tough, boy. You tough with it.
Well, you know, no, I didn't want to hurt his confidence. And one of the guys he played against, Bobby, was in high school especially, was Brooks' older brother, Alex Lopez, who comes to a lot of games.
For real?
Came to a lot of games. Alex was a 7-footer. Chris gave, what, 33 and about 15 rebounds in a league championship game. But
Hey, Chris, you like that, Chris?
I used to be all right, Bobby.
Yeah, but my point is, man, those are bonds that you keep forever. You know, whether you compete with each other, play against each other, you know, those are bonds, yes, man, that you will always have, and just, you know, they're just never broken. You're just never broken. We talked about Julius Randle and Aaron Gordon, all those guys. That's some good stuff. And I know your mom must have been just excited beyond just when you started moving up in the rankings and getting that notoriety, yeah, as a parent. I mean,
so my mom actually played a big part in that, for real, man, because – so in high school, I won a state championship every year in high school.
Wow. You gotta know that. No, I had no idea. Freshman year too? 4 years?
Yeah, wow. Freshman year, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade.
So my high school won
4 years. Yeah.
Wow.
So my high school won 5 out of 6 years in high school.
Okay. That's crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody else name any other name I would know from that high school team? Just curious.
Nah, that's fine. You ain't gonna, know nobody.
But how good?
A bunch of guys that play hard. That was dogs, though.
My 10th grade year,
I was starting.
Okay.
So I was starting my 10th grade year, and like halfway through the season, my high school coach just stopped starting me. But at the time, I didn't really understand it. But because, like, he started starting all, like, senior guys. Like, he wanted the seniors to get looks. He wanted the seniors to, you know, get some scholarship offers or just to get a look on the court just so they can play ball after high school, which, you know, I didn't agree with at the time. But now looking back on, okay, cool, I understand. You know what I'm saying? I understand now.
Makes sense.
But in the moment, I don't agree with this. I don't like this at all.
Yeah.
So he benched me. I had to come off the bench. And I remember the championship game that year I got in, only played like 3 possessions, bro. Like, he put me in for like 3 possessions. And like, we were smoking his team, bro. So, like, he didn't put me in, like, 3 possessions. After the game, bro, I felt like I didn't help the team do nothing. You know what I'm saying? I felt like I didn't help the team do nothing. Like, even though we won, I was happy we won.
Yeah.
I wasn't selfish, but I was like, dang, like, deep down, I feel like, dang, I didn't do nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't do nothing to help the team. On the ride home, we ride from Hot Springs to Little Rock, and that's like a 40-45 minute drive. I didn't ride the bus back with the team. I just rode my mom. I'm going to go home then. Like, roll home. I'm just sitting in the passenger seat just chilling. But I'm really sad, for real.
Crying? No tears?
I want to cry, but I'm really just like, okay, dang, that like, just I really down. Didn't play. I really didn't play.
Yeah.
And I didn't start crying until my mom started talking to me.
Mm.
So my mom started talking to me. I started crying a little bit.
Yeah.
My mom like, hey, son, like, I know you're disappointed in your performance tonight. I know coach didn't play you, and you know what I'm saying, a lot, but like, never let that affect your play. Like, let this moment be a defining moment in your career. Like, always think about this. Like, you know, you got to put more work in. You got to put more time in. You got to start outworking people. You got to go harder. You got to look yourself in the mirror. Okay, what have I done wrong? What can I do better? And ever since my mom said that, bro, like my basketball went like I took this shit serious. I'm talking about ways. I got in the gym more.
Yeah.
I started getting up shots more. I started getting better. I started getting more confident in my game and who I am. Like, and shout out to my mom for that though, man. Without that conversation, like, that's like a career defining moment for me. Like, just my mom saying those little things.
Yeah.
Every time when something gets rocky or something gets offbeat with me, I always think about that moment for some reason.
Well, and this leads me to my next question here, man. And man, so my father was a big part of my life. You know, basketball coach down in Louisiana. Went to every practice. I wish he would keep his behind home, but every practice when I was in the 10th grade, all that. So at UCLA, John Wooden, I started as a freshman, Bobby. About 7-8 games, averaged 12-7. 17 years old, started with Bill Walton and Jamal Wilkes and that whole crew. But Coach Wooden called my father, Jeff Johnson, and said, "Jeff, this is Coach Wooden. Marcus has really played well as a starter, but I think for the NCAA tournaments, I'm going to go with my upperclassmen. I just want you to know that. But it's not because of anything he hasn't done." So my father's response was, "Well, Coach, it's your team, but you're going to lose with your upperclassmen." and Coach Wooden was like, "Well, Jeff, you're probably right. You're probably right. But my point is, and you may have answered it already, was there ever moments where you wished you had that father figure? I mean, did that ever weigh on you at all? Or was your mother such a such an inspiring type, strong enough person where, you know, tell me, how was that dynamic for you?"
Yeah, so like with me, I didn't have a dad growing up, but like I had like father figures along the way that kind of like filled the void.
Yeah.
So like obviously my mom tried her best to be like both sides, but you know, like it's only so much a woman can teach you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like my grandpa was like the first person that put like a basketball in my hand for real. Wow. Like playing against him. Be my mama in hooping. I couldn't be my grandpa in hooping. Like my grandpa used to my grandpa used to bust my ass. Ooh. For real. Like my grandpa was nice. Grandpa had to fade away all that.
Did
like,
he?
I couldn't be my grandpa in hooping for nothing. I used to get something. I used to kick the ball over the fence.
Man. Tell me about it.
Get mad at him. So my grandpa for one. And then it's this guy named Marcus McCurl, who's like my father figure, who's like my business partner now, who's like my manager. He's like everything to me. Guy named Marcus McCurl. And then the third one is Corliss Williamson as well.
Wow. Just being able to. Big Nasty.
Big Nasty. Like Big Nasty was my AAU coach growing up.
Oh,
so.
Man.
So being able to. So like fun fact, like my mom used to like cut hair at a barber college because she was trying to just, you know, nickel and dime, trying to find ways to help provide for the fam, like doing anything it was. So my mom went to barber college to become a barber. His brother was in barber college as well, and I'm just this tall, lanky kid that's at work with my mom, just waiting on my mom to get off.
Right.
So he come in and, you know, come get a cut from his brother or whatever it is, come holler at his brother, and then there's me. He asked me, "Am I playing with a team, or is there a team you playing on?" I'm like, "I only got a team to play with."
Wow.
He like, "Well, shoot, I'm starting my own AAU team. Come play AAU with me." So it was like it just happened for me, and then I played AAU for him, and then from there it was like it was everything. Get a chance, go to the NBA player's house, get a chance to see all the accolades that he made, get a chance to see him, you know, wear the Arkansas jersey. It gave me like an inspiration. It gave me a drive. It gave me something to look forward to every day. So,
well, see, now I see why you're so tough down in the post. Now, that Big Nasty and practices AAU. How much did he beat on you and get into your head? Now,
boy, an ox.
No joke.
Boy, an ox, man. That boy's strong, sir. Man. Yeah. He might not be that tall, man, but that boy's strong, man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Chris, you were a freshman right on that national championship.
Yeah, y'all play against.
I was a freshman.
Y'all play against Big Nasty in the championship.
Big Nasty.
In 95, we beat him.
Scotty Thurman. Yeah, that whole
Scotty
crew.
Thurman, Bobby. You hit the
shoot. Yeah,
that jumper.
Yeah. Who else was on that team, Chris? The big guy from Darnell Robinson from the Bay Area. Yeah,
Dwight
they had a
Stewart,
yeah.
Quarterback.
Yeah, they had a huge
Dwight
team.
Dwight Stewart. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. 40 minutes ahead.
How much y'all
Nolan
beat them
Richardson
by in the championship?
Woo! We got them by 12. I think we ran them. They didn't think we could run with them. Coach Richardson was like before the game. He was like, you know, they go about to get this 40 minutes of hell. Our coach was like, "It's about to be 40 minutes of heck because we like running too." And so we kind of got with him in the game, man. We had a freshman at the time, a light-skinned kid at the shooting guard, had a reverse. He had 26-9 in the championship. And then we had Ed O'Bannon.
Toby Bailey.
The lefty forward, National Player of the Year. He and Corliss went at it. But we had a whole game plan for Corliss.
He always talk about him. He always talk about Big Fella. About Big Fella. Big Fella gave him a little trouble.
Yeah, that day. You know, that it was our day that day.
Yeah, but that was a great, great moment. But listen,
man, y'all stopped out back to back, man. Y'all stopped out back to back.
I know.
They won it the year before.
Back to back, man.
They won it the year before.
They beat Duke.
Wow.
They beat Duke in the championship.
Arkansas was a heavy favorite. You know, they were a heavy favorite. They had a guard that was talking trash because UCLA only had like 6 players available. One of those dudes, Chris, was like, "Who else they gonna put in? The guy with the towels."
He was talking about me.
These towels on his, what was that, McDaniel? What was that kid's name?
They had a towels on the sideline, like an ML car.
Turbans and all kind of books and all that, man. But it was some great, and I was doing UCLA radio at the time. So I was right there, Bobby, every game, right there, pumping them up, talking them up. So it was a great, great, great season.
How long you did that radio for?
Did like two
How long
three,
did that radio for?
Yeah, 2 or 3 years. I was doing UCLA radio, man. I was talking about Jamaican working 5 and 6 jobs. I was doing UCLA radio. I was doing some games for ESPN. I was a restricted earnings coach for Gene Bartow at University of Alabama, Birmingham. And I was doing some Sonic games, too. And so I did the National Championship.
You was getting to it. That's what I heard.
Keeping these ears beating, bro.
I heard you getting to it. I ain't mad at you, OG.
But in National Championship.
I ain't mad at you, OG.
National Championship game in 1995, I did that game and on radio and then did the NBA Finals in 96 with Michael Jordan against the Sonics and Gary Payton and John Kemp. And that it was like the greatest 2 years of basketball, man, I've ever been a part of. But talk about – let's move on with your career, man, because so you're with the Bulls, you know, I'm gonna gloss over this incident with Mirotić because that was, you know, but you know, it, from what I read into it, it was like, you know, it was a fight and he lost, and so hey, you know, it was a fight, he lost.
Yeah, we keep it pushing.
But then you go from there to the Wizards, I believe, for a short stint, and then to New York, and so now this is where I want to pick it back up with the Knicks. You signed 1 year with the team option, and your numbers and your minutes went down. That first, you went from 14 a game to like 10 a game, minutes 26, 27 to 21. Do you think?
Nah, not even. I don't think I played 20 minutes a game. Bro.
But do you think some of that was New York trying to keep your value down so they could, you know, refuse the team option and bring you back for less money? What was the dynamic going on? How was that mentally just to have to deal with man, that season? You're in New York. You're in the Big Apple.
It was tough, man. I would say, like, for me personally, going into my fourth year, I had got offered a rookie contract extension from the Bulls. It was like a 4-year, $52 million deal, which at the time I really should have took, but I'm looking at what other guys got paid. I'm looking at what guys in my position getting paid and things like that, looking at stuff that really don't even matter. I need to be worried about what God got for me.
Yeah.
So I turn it down. The next week, I hurt my MCL. Like, can't even make this up. Hurt my MCL the next week. I'm out 4 to 8 weeks.
Wow.
I come back in like 6 weeks. I get traded at trade deadline. So now I'm on the Wizards. You know what I'm saying? I played 2 months with the Wizards. And then the season's over. We don't make the playoffs. I'm a free agent now. It's 2019. I'm a free agent. I got only 2 teams that's really talking to me, which is the Jazz and the Knicks.
Okay. Yeah.
Before I go meet with the Jazz, Bogey signed for $80 million. So now my deal with the Jazz, they ain't got no money for me.
Yeah.
So now I'm really, you know what I'm saying, my only option is the Knicks. I don't really want to sign a team option deal, but I'm 24 years old. I need to make some money for my fam.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Cool. I'm going to sign this 2-year, $35 million they got for me over here. Sound good. You know what I'm saying? Sound good. I'm going to make 17 this year. I'm going to make 18 next year. Right. Cool. Get into the season. It's just a bad year. You know, some of the years are just bad years, man. Like, the team chemistry not there. The camaraderie not there.
Who was there? Who was there with the Knicks?
Makeup of
Who was there with the Knicks during that time? Who was there? Give me some names. Just refresh my memory.
Alfred Payton. Okay. Julius Randle. Tyus Gibson.
Okay.
Frank Ntilikina. That's R.J. Barrett's rookie year.
Yeah.
R.J. Barrett's rookie year.
Who was coaching?
Mitchell Robinson.
Who was coaching?
Coach is David Fizdale. He got fired like 10 games in.
Okay.
He got fired like 10 games in. Yeah, Fizz got fired like 10 games in. So it was just a rocky year.
Yeah.
I started playing some good basketball like January, February. All-Star break comes, we play like three games after the break, and then the pandemic starts.
Wow.
Like, damn, like pandemic happened, which in the moment I'm like, damn, why did this have to happen? But really, it was like the best thing that happened for me, for real. I got a chance to just go home and get away from all like negative energy, like negative turmoil. Like, you know how it is playing in the big cities. Like, sometimes they might make you feel lesser than what you are. You know what I'm saying? So like, I got a chance to just get away from all that and just got a chance just to go home.
Yeah.
When I go home in March, I'm not knowing that I'm gonna be home from March to December though. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking we finna go home. The pandemic gonna clean up.
Right. Yeah.
So the bubble starts, but they don't even invite our team to the bubble because we that trash, bro. Like, we was that trash. Like, we didn't even, like for real though. Like, bro, we don't even get invited to the bubble, bro. Wow. It's 22 teams into the bubble, dude. And my team didn't go to the bubble. Yeah. Like, we didn't go to the bubble. I'm at home from March of 2020 to December of 2020, bro.
Wow.
I'm in Arkansas. No, I'm not hooping. Nothing. I'm at the crib just working out.
Yeah.
Not knowing what's next, but I got to stay ready. Got to stay ready.
Yeah.
Sign with the Bucks. We win a championship 6 months later. That's how my year go.
But back up. So now, and I heard this story that the Bucks didn't recruit you. You came to the Bucks. Yeah. Talk about that story, that phone call and everything that happened with that.
Yeah. So, like, this is going to correlate with the last question, too. So, me signing a team option deal, the Knicks turned down my team option. They tried to re-sign me in because, like, the bubble, like, the Lakers won a championship, like, October 2020.
Yeah.
And free agency was, like, November 2020. Like, the month's all the way off. Like, free agency, like, November now. So I remember, like, the Knicks calling me back, telling me that they're going to turn down my team option. And they're going to offer me a two-year $20 million deal.
From 18 to 10 million is what they was cutting you down.
Yeah. They offered me a two-year $20 million deal.
Yeah.
But the second year team option again. So I'm like, hold on, bro. Hold on. Like,
I ain't falling for that again.
So that means next year I'm going to be making $4 million next year.
Yeah, right.
Right. Like, what we doing?
Wow. Yeah.
So I remember vividly me being at home. That's just watching, like, I've watched basketball so much. Like, I watch basketball every day so much, but during the pandemic, I was focused on what other team I can get on to show guys that I can help a team win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And just watching the Bucks during the pandemic, watching them play against the Magic, watching them play against the Heat in the second round. I'm like, bro, like, that's a team I feel like I can fit on, that I can just beat Bobby. And I can help the team win. November comes, my agent presents these offers to me. It was like Minnesota, it was like the Knicks, and it was like somebody else. But all these offers was team option deals, which I don't want a team option deal.
Yeah.
I want to at least be in control of my own destiny.
Yes, sir.
I'm like, hey man, like, bro, you got Giannis' number. He like, what are you talking about? Right? I'm like, bro, do you have Giannis' number, bro? He was like, no, but why do you need his number? I said, man, just give me his number, bro. Got his number. I called him, bro. Swear, I called him like, yo, bro, like, you don't know me, bro. I don't know you, bro, but I can help y'all win a championship, bro. I feel like I can help y'all win a championship. And 6 months later, we won a chip, bro. It was one of the craziest things that like one of the craziest feats that I accomplished, bro. Like,
but Bobby, back up a minute. What was Giannis's response, though? This is what I'm interested in. When you said,
his response was like, we don't have any money. Like, I'm like, bro, it ain't even about the money for me. Like, it ain't about the money for me right now. Like, it ain't even about the money.
Wow.
Like, I just need to get on the team to get my name back right. Like, everybody calling me a bad teammate. Everybody calling me everything that I'm not. Like, people don't know who Bobby Portis is because I ain't been on a team to display who I am. Everybody think I'm just this mad, crazy motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody think I'm just this mad, crazy person that can't play ball or I can't help a team. I'm just a bad locker room guy. I've never been a bad locker room guy. I just got a bad rip because I hit somebody who
just knocking fools out.
You know what I'm saying?
He just want to knock fools out. Yeah.
Yeah, so
Yeah,
that's what transpired. And
go ahead, Chris.
No, I'm sorry, Bobby. I was wondering, like, when you saw that Bucks roster before the call to Giannis, before you did that, when you looked at the team and the team makeup, like, what did you specifically eyeball in that rotation positionally that made you say, "Man, I need to get with the Bucks specifically."
I fit in there. I can fit in there. What was it about their lineup?
Yeah, just like the spacing, like the running habits, the spacing. Like, I feel like I can shoot the ball with the best of the bigs in the league. Like, you look at the best shooting bigs in the league, I feel like I was in that realm, even at the time where people probably didn't consider me as a good shooter. Like, I always been able to shoot the ball, so yeah. I just needed somebody that believed in me to give me the ball. You know what I'm saying? I just needed somebody that believed in me. I needed a coaching staff that believed in me. Yeah. I needed a playing style that I can fit in, that I can show guys I can hoop. And then just my energy that I bring, bro. I didn't feel like they had nobody on the team that played with the energy that I can give, like, on a nightly basis. Like, you don't have to coach me up to get ready to hoop. I love to hoop. Like, my energy going to be the same, bro, no matter what. Whether I'm making shots, whether I'm missing shots, my energy going to be there regardless.
Yeah, and that's one of the things Coach Wooden would talk about, Bobby's pyramid of success, enthusiasm. I mean, how it's contagious. And that's what I remember. You brought that to the team. So now, when did you know that it was the right move? I mean, when was it like, oh, yeah, Coach Bud was there. He had the rectangles drawn around the hoop, the quadrants. He wanted the spacing and all that. But when did you know? When did it feel like, man, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus, for putting me in Milwaukee. When did you have that feeling? When was your thank you, Jesus
moment? My thank you, Jesus moment came in game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals when Coach Bud came up to me in my locker and told me that I was starting. And I remember the whole world being like, the Bucks are dead. Giannis, his knee hurt his knee.
Yeah.
But I knew, like, what I did in that moment to prepare for that moment. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was at the crib for 9 months getting up shots, OG.
Yeah.
I'm at the crib for 9 months preparing for what's ever coming in the next 12 months.
Mm.
So now when we fast forward, I'm like, bro, I've been ready for this moment. Like, I said, Coach, I got you, bro. I won't let you down.
God damn.
20-10, yo.
I'm
you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, 20-10.
20-10, yo.
Bro.
Okay.
Yeah. What was the locker room? I mean, was there any sense of doom, or was it just like, hey, we just got our work cut out for us? What was it like?
Yeah, so like the second round against Brooklyn, that was like a heavyweight slug match, like. The amount of, like, talented players in that round, the amount of, like, the shot-making ability was, like, crazy. People making crazy contested shots. I think that was, like, the best version of KD that we seen, for real. I don't think that version of KD gets enough respect. Like, bro was making everything. I'm talking about, like, no matter how you want, like, bro was making everything. I'm talking, he was making everything. Like, he was locked in,
woo!
Bro. And then, like, we get past them. We get past that round. And I remember in the locker room, game 7, like, after we had won, it was like, you know, like, it was like one of them, like, bro, like we did it. Like we stuck together. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Every round not going to be pretty. Yeah. Some guys might be in and out the rotation, but everybody stuck together. And, you know, to win a championship, bro, it takes everybody. Yeah. Like, it takes the guys that's not playing to police the guys that is playing to keep their confidence high. Like, it takes everybody in a different way. So, like, I remember us being in there, and, like, that was, like, a great moment for us. And then fast forward to the finals, it was the exact, like, it was, like, the total opposite. Us being down 0-2 and us flying back to Milwaukee. I remember sitting on the plane, and we all just looking around at each other. And normally we play cars. We play Bure.
Yeah,
but this time we weren't even playing cards. We were just looking at each other. And I remember PJ Tucker was like, "Man, what we doing, man? What we doing? Like, what we doing, yo? Like, what we doing here, man? What we on, man? What we on? Really, y'all? What we on? What we on, man?"
I love PJ.
Like, woke us up a little bit.
Yeah,
I woke us up a little bit, man. So shout out PJ. Shout out PJ.
Woo, shout out PJ, man. I love PJ Tucker. That was a huge, huge acquisition in March of that year, like a buyout or something. Man, that made a difference.
Bruh.
And what did PJ bring?
Bro, that tough. Yeah, and like guys like PJ, the rest let them get a little rough. You know what I'm saying? The ref let him get away with a little hole in the jersey. You know what I'm saying?
Out, like,
you
crash out a little guy, bit.
The ref let you get away with a little something.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks.
But go ahead, Chris.
Although, so Bobby, when you think about it, and you have that experience, man, you win a title. Fast forward 5 years later, you and Giannis are the only two dudes left from that squad, and now you're the elder statesman. You're the leadership of this Young Bucks squad. What does your approach look like in this kind of first training camp, yes, going into it, where you're actually like one of these dudes that you used to look up to, guys that used to lead, you know, these elder statesmen? What was it like for you this first training camp with this new roster?
So, like, one of my, like, best qualities is that I always, like, been a leader. So, like, me stepping into, like, this new role that I have now was, like, easy for me, like, seamless, because, like, I always been a guy that kind of, you know, led by example, led by, you know, my play, how hard I play. But now just having a chance to have that vocal leadership has been great as well. Like, for me personally, it's been fun. I always had, like, guys like Chris Middleton, guys like Brooke Lopez to always heavily rely on for, like, you know, advice or just certain things in the game that I see that I can come to those guys for. Now, fast forward, now it's guys come to me, hey, BP, what you think about this? What you think about that? So the league is crazy, man, but I'm definitely blessed and fortunate to be in this position to just give all the gems that I have to the younger guys and watch these guys grow. You know, shout out to my guy AJ Green. They got paid today. Like, yes, stuff like that makes me happy. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, I watch these guys grind. I don't think most people know, like, our grind for real. You know what I'm saying? Like, most regular people don't know the NBA grind. Like, it's just not the 82 games that we play. It's practicing. It's staying ready. It's, you know, waiting on your number to be called. It's opportunities sometimes, hoping that the opportunity presents itself for you. Yeah. Situations, team, camaraderie, like, all these things can play a big factor in your career. So, definitely guys like AJ Green has given me a great outlook on, you know, on like what I can do to help these guys grow as players, man. Guys like him definitely make me proud just because of the work ethic and them taking on the constructive criticism when we get on them and not getting mad, just fixing things. And then, you know, you look up and get you $45 million, AJ. So shout out to my boy, AJ, man.
There you go.
shout out to AJ Green, man.
Yeah, and shout out to AJ. But like I always say, Bobby, I always say, you know, you don't fall out of bed shooting 47% from the three-point line like you did the championship, seeing being a top five. You know, you don't fall out. That's work. That's grind. That's work. That's diligence. That's sacrifice. That's discipline. Every single day, getting your shots up, man.
Every
and especially to be able to knock down that 3-point shot for a 6'10" big like you're doing. I mean, you know, just talk about that, man. The amount of work that goes into being the player that you are today.
Yeah, man. Like, the work ethic is second to none. Like, I try to tell all my young guys that come into the league now, that come to my team, is that it's two things that as an NBA player, that's really only in your control, and that's your work ethic and that's your attitude. If you have your work ethic and attitude right each and every day, like, you're giving yourself a good chance to be a good pro. You know, you got to have that drive to want to get better. You know, all these guys get drafted each and every year, and 60 guys get picked, but you look up 11 years later, like I am, and then there's only 13 guys in your draft. Why so? Maybe because some guys' work ethic isn't always there. Maybe some guys just like what the game gives to them, or maybe some guys just like everything else that basketball gives and not the game. So, like I say all the time in, like, all my interviews, like, we do all these testing combines at the combines, the jump test, the sliding test. But, like, one thing you can't test is someone's work ethic. One thing you can't test is someone's will. One thing you can't test is someone's heart. Like, you can't test those things. So those things come from self-belief and self within. So definitely it's the work always works, man. Like, you can look out on the court and tell who's been working. It's gonna show. Like, it's gonna rave on the TV who been working, who been putting the work in. So you can't hide sweat, man. Can't hide sweat.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of work ethic, I mean, one of the guys that epitomizes that is KG, the big ticket, Kevin Garnett, man. And what's going on with you two, man? You guys got this mutual respect society thing going on. Talk about that relationship with KG.
Yeah, it's been great to just build a relationship with one of your favorite players, man. Like, you know, growing up as a kid, coming from Little Rock, Arkansas, I'm not never really thinking like I'm gonna have KG's number. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm not there thinking like this gonna this.
Yes.
Like yo, so I can hit him up and ask for advice and things like that.
Wow.
So like being able to fast forward 15 years from when I first started dreaming about becoming an NBA player 20 years ago to being in the moment now, being able to play for the same coach that my favorite player played for, to go to the NBA Cup last year and finally just being able to meet him for the first time. Yeah, I played against him one time in like a preseason game my rookie year, but I don't really count that because we was competitors, you know what I'm saying? But actually getting able to meet you and talk to you and we exchanged numbers and you hit me up when I got suspended, that was like very much so like eye-opening for me. And that helped me out a lot because, you know, when you're going through a troubling time, it's always tough, especially nowadays with social media and all these things. It kind of amplifies it and you kind of feel it more. You know what I'm saying? You feel it more.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Definitely, my relationship with KG, man, is something that I definitely cherish a lot, man. Yeah. Just I took a lot from his game, his passion, his work ethic, his will. My three favorite players growing up, KG, Zach Randolph, Rasheed Wallace. Like I try to take something for all those guys' games and try to mold my own self into the player I am today.
I can see that, man. I can see that. So now let's talk about this iteration of this team. A lot of changes, man. I love them. Miles Turner, that we got younger, we got athletic, and we got deeper, man. Just talk about this team, the depth of this team. That's the thing that I appreciate watching you guys in the preseason, doing games, watching practice. Man, it's just a lot of it's 12 deep, 11 or 12 deep of just legitimate contributing basketball players on this team.
I think it's 13, 14, 15 deep, man. Sure. I ain't gonna lie, like just because we got a lot of plug and play guys. Like we got a lot of guys that on any given night can go off. You know what I'm saying? So like you can't really just key in. Like like you can key in on Jan, but you key in on Jan, we got AJ Green and GT. They 40% snipers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You want to leave those guys open? And then you got Miles Turner. You know what I'm saying? One of the best shooting big mans in the NBA. You know what I'm saying? And then we got Kevin Porter Jr., which I'm expecting him to have a huge, major, major jump this year. And then our bench, man, I think we got the best bench in the NBA. Like, bench in the NBA. You got Cole Anthony, Ryan Rollins in the backcourt. And then you got TP at the three and me and Kuz at the four and five. How you want to play it? Like, it's going to be very much so exciting basketball that we're going to be playing. I think our biggest challenge is to play with one another. Don't let the ball stick. Just play with one another. Keep the ball hopping. When the ball hops, and it's the ball going to find who needs to shoot. So I think that's going to be like one of our biggest challenges is that playing with one another and just giving that sacrifice up, sacrificing cuts. Sometimes it might be your time to cut back door to get somebody else open.
Yeah.
Sometimes it might be your time to screen, like emphasize screens. Like all these little things going to help us get the edge. But I think one thing that's going to help us get off to a great start is that we have a lot of competitive guys on our team. A lot of guys with super high competitive spirits. And when you mix competitive spirit with guys that's coachable, I think that's a recipe for success in my eyes.
I agree. Yeah. Bobby, Doc has mentioned that this new defensive scheme where you guys are kind of trapping or being aggressive on pick and rolls, it kind of fits and plays right into your hands. You get to excel at some of the things you do really well. Do you think this freedom on the defensive end is going to help kind of expand yourself, your role in, on the team beyond just the energy and all the scoring, like defensively, steals, deflections, making plays?
Yeah, because like if you look at me in college, like I was up on at the touch of the screen, switching things like that, being active with my hands and passing lanes and things like that. So it's definitely been a new experience for us, especially how like the last 5 years we played a lot of drop. We played a lot of getting back on screen, letting guards get downhill, kind of more so wanting guys to shoot that in between shot, the floaters, the mid range, kind of living with those.
Yeah.
But now I like our fly around type of defense, getting up, making guys rotate, doing your next job. That's gonna be a big emphasized thing that you guys probably gonna hear all year long is doing your next job. Your next job might be rotating over to help your teammate. Your next job might be making an extra pass. So just doing your next job is going to be a big thing that's going to be emphasized all season long.
So, and Bobby, so now the 3-point shooting, you know, so that was a big emphasis, just cranking up the volume. So I'm looking at some numbers here. I mean, you guys are shooting, are you making more 3-pointers per game in the preseason than any team in the league, just over 17 a game. Ball reversal threes, the numbers are way up. Kick out pass threes, the numbers are way up. Forced turnovers and threes off of turnovers, those numbers are way up. It's one thing to say, let's be intentional about shooting more threes, but what has Doc and the staff done to kind of infuse that mindset into you guys that, you know, we got great shooters, let's get some more 3-point shots up?
Just ball movement, second side actions. Obviously, we know who the scorers are on the team, so those guys are going to, you know, play their role and do their thing. But just emphasizing more swing actions, emphasizing more uphill DHOs, getting out of actions quicker, getting to the second side. You know, NBA has changed now. I remember when I first came into the league, bro, we was running floppy sets. Guys running floppy, pin down actions, guards coming down, curling down, dump it down to the post, work out, face up, do your thing, pal. You know what I'm saying? We were working out like that. Now it's more so bigs catching it up top, DHOing to the second side, screen, roll, pop. If nothing happens on that side, throw it back to the next side, next action. So it's definitely a different game now, but I think it fits our team so much with all the shooting we have. Like, damn near everybody on our team is a 40% shooter. So when we swing the ball, definitely, like, that next option is still a good option.
So listen, you know, I've been saying during the preseason, I don't know if you heard it, but I've been saying, you know, you shot over 40% from the 3-point line 3 or 4 times in your career. You around 36 last year. I think this is the year you're gonna come back into the 40s. I can put that out there.
Last year was tough for me. I had a lot going on, man. I got burglarized. I had a whole lot going on, man. So it's gonna be a good year for Bobby Portis, man. I'm gonna speak. I'm talking third person right there, man.
Speaking into existence, brother. That's it, man. So listen, man, we appreciate you so much coming around. You'll be hearing more from Bobby Portis on Locked In on the next Behind the Bucks podcast series, man. But I'm just so excited to get this thing out. Chris Middleton coming in for game one. I mean, that's got to be, I don't know, is that special still going against your old team?
Think about
even though
it,
you
man.
Were just there a minute.
I was thinking about this the other day. I said, what are the odds that we play Chris Middleton on the first game of the season?
It's crazy. Yeah.
And then what are the odds that the day we play Chris Middleton is his jersey number? Like, that's
the 22nd.
That's the fire, right? That's fire, though. So
that is.
That's fire.
That is.
That's fire, though. So, you know,
yeah.
I might have to wear me a little Chris Middleton, you know what I'm saying, Bucks jersey to the first game. So give him some love.
That'd be cool.
Man. You know what I'm saying? Got to give my guy some love. But
yes, sir.
But we need that dub, though, Chris. We need that win. We got to pop it off early,
dub.
Man.
Facts.
Good to see you, but we need the dub. We need the
dub, man.
Yeah. But listen, man, we thank you so much for coming by here, District Man. And you've just captured the hearts of Milwaukee fans and fans around the country with your enthusiasm, your leadership, your play, all those intangibles, but even more so how you get it done on the court, man. And we just appreciate everything you stand for and everything you're doing, man, for this community of Milwaukee. And thank you so much for joining here, District, today, man. We thank you.
Appreciate you.
I appreciate y'all, man. I appreciate y'all having me on, man. This is a dope podcast. I've been watching y'all over the last couple weeks and stuff, man, especially throughout the summertime when y'all had it going on and stuff. So I appreciate what y'all are doing, man. Just know I'm always tuned in to y'all stuff. I be watching, man. I might not say nothing, but I be watching, man.
I appreciate you.
We appreciate you. Bobby Portis, man, here on your district. Have a good one, man.